Now, you've been working in the plant up to 52.
Mm-hmm.
Did the plant change a lot during that time?
Yes. They hired more women. And in the early part of 52, the civil rights started, and Northrop hired the first blacks that had ever worked in the plant.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw anything on any employment that they were excluded before that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do government contracts, you do what the government says. And including today, you'll have to be qualified. You have to be Mexican and blacks, a percentage of Northrop. And, the government controls for factories have taken the ownership control away from the companies. Because how can a company keep going if they can't hire qualified people? And the ruling is, I believe, they have to hire the same percentage of minorities as the surrounding, I forget whether it's 3 or 5 miles around the company. Say, if you live out in the Thule somewhere where there's no blacks within 100 miles or Mexicans, you don't have to hire them. But they did at Northrop. And they have had a horrendous problem with that. And all the clerks were called in that you are not to refer to anyone as a Negro. You are to call them sir. You are to treat them like anyone else, as if anybody would be any different. We clerks were trained better than that. But none of the clerks that I know of ever had any problems. But down on the machines, they've had a horrible problem. Because they come in and, I don't have to work, I'm black.
Mm-hmm.
They'll tell their supervisors that.
Mm-hmm.
And if they try to fire them, they have to give them, anybody has to get 3 notices, disciplinary notices, before they can be laid off or fired. Well, they can be laid off and they can be rehired. But if they're fired, they cannot be rehired. And they call the NAACP lawyers out there and the labor relations to try to settle the problem rather than lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened just before I left. And the first ones that came in went to work on the riveting on the assembly lines. And then it wasn't long till one hired in decided he wanted to be a supervisor. And he didn't like it when he was told, you don't hire supervisors, you work your way up. Well, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I don't think there was much difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you said women had started to be hired.
More women.
Uh-huh. Did, was there any special reason that was happening as far as you know, or was it just...
all to do with civil rights. You couldn't discriminate against women, blacks, Mexicans, or Chinese, Japanese, anybody else.
So that was also part of the civil rights.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And you see, they could call back a lot of women that were trained.
Mm-hmm.
And if a woman was trained in a job, they couldn't say no.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were hired in before the war, there was no women trained on machines anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the automobile factories and things like that they were, but not out here in aircraft they weren't.
Did you ever think of going back to machine work?
Mm-hmm.
Why was that?
Mainly because another reason I left work, Tom and my salaries together, our biggest year was, I think, $11,000 we made in 1 year together. Well, I was the type of homebody that canned and sewed. I made all of Tom's shirts and my clothes and took care of all the house and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working 4 jobs rather than just 2.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, the emotions of the people in 3 really got to me. Because of different things that, well, one fellow had hired in there, had been there 3 months, had moved his family out here from Detroit, Michigan, and he didn't have, well, you're on 90-day probation when you come in to see if you work out and everything before you get full coverage on insurance or anything. And he had a ruptured appendicitis and had to go to the hospital. Well, somebody down where he worked, we knew he didn't have any insurance, but we didn't know he'd moved his small family babies out here from Michigan and didn't have a dime and was worried about his rent. So I went around and took up a collection and food, and the company paid his hospital. Mm-hmm. And when that man came back to work, he said, "This has to be God's country." Mm-hmm. He said he never knew that even families cared that much about each other. Mm-hmm. But that was Northrop. Mm-hmm. One fellow daughter had ruptured spleen in Texas, mm-hmm. and he almost killed himself giving blood transfusions to save her life. Mm-hmm. Well, when she came back out here, she'd ended up in the hospital, and I think he was 40 or 50 pints of blood behind. And in 15 minutes, mm-hmm. I got blood transfusions. All you had to do was just start the word, and it would just go through the plant. Mm-hmm. And whether anybody knew anybody or not, it didn't matter. Somebody needed help. Mm-hmm. And it's still that way today. They have their Red Cross blood bank of, I forgot how many, thousands and thousands of pints of blood Northrop has in bank. Any member of Northrop's family ever needs a blood transfusion, there's no charge.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you say that the family sense was still there then?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you talking about
most definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like one of the most serious accidents that ever happened in the machine shop happened just last year. Cutter flew loose. And cut a man's, he was a Polish immigrant, his hand off here, and went in and cut him almost in two.
So it had, about 3 inches behind his wrist?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And they have, around machines, they have these sterilized rags like you see around filling stations. They have those that are sterilized. Well, a quick thinking of one of his close working buddies grabbed a handful of it and shoved it in him like this, you know, and another one grabbed his hand and another one ran for ice. Mm-hmm. So the man today is home and begging to come back to work. Mm-hmm. And when he came out of, they sewed his side up here. Mm-hmm. It, cut the blood off of one kidney and he lost that, but they sewed him up in Hawthorne, and then they helicoptered him to UCLA Medical Center, and they sewed his hand back on. Mm-hmm. Well, within 6 weeks, he was moving his fingers on his hand. Mm-hmm. And Tom and I don't know how many, John and, I think there was 6 or 8 fellows went over in a little van one day to donate blood at the hospital, mm-hmm. and Tom went in to see him. And he was concerned about the doctor bills and the hospital bills his wife was getting. She couldn't understand. They were all marked paid. Mm-hmm. See, it was a domestic, what do they call that? Industrial injury. Mm-hmm. So they're totally covered. But his story would be a whole different book. Mm-hmm. He escaped from Poland and I think it was Poland. And then he had come here, and then he went back and got his girlfriend and got her out, and they'd come here, and he just could not believe that any country could be like this, let alone a company. Mm-hmm. And the clerk would call him up every few days to see how he was feeling. I want to get out of here. I want to come back to work. He just felt that he was responsible for the accident, which he wasn't. Mm-hmm. No way was he responsible. It was just one of those freak accidents. Mm-hmm. one day our son was running a machine, and a part flew from the middle of the shop. You have no idea how big these big barn buildings are, and it flew clear across the room and went out through the wall. If it hit anybody on the way, it would have just mowed them flat, you know, or cut them in two. Those things just happen.
Yeah.
But Northrop has the safest accident of any factory in the United States,
mm-hmm.
for safety precautions and things like that. We've had very few.
Mm. Now, so you work at Engine 52,
mm-hmm.
Just to say, kind of, like, in those early years, you talked about being set in your ways and
mm-hmm.
having been on your own.
Mm-hmm.
How were decisions made between you and your husband?
Until this day, I'll still discuss, you know, what's to be done or what should be done. And he would say, don't do this and don't do that. And just a prime example of when I got a hold of the reins of being my own person after we were married. We were going to have guests in for a party, which we hadn't had before. And I didn't have a coffee table. And I called him up and said, I'd found the coffee table, $25, $30, I think. Could I get it? And he said, no. And I thought, how dare he say no? I'm working, earning the money. So I went ahead and got the coffee table. We laugh about that till today. She asked my opinion, and does she darn well please. But he was not raised in the macho attitude where he had to be, you know, the big macho and the condescending wife.
Mm-hmm.
He had just never ever met a strong-willed woman, I guess, as I was.
Mm-hmm.
But, because he was raised in a boarding school
mm-hmm.
since he was 9, so he just more or less grew up on his own. But I would say his strong points are my weaker points, and my weaker points are his stronger points. So we make a pretty good pair of scissors
mm-hmm.
between the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the pusher and the fighter, and he goes to work every day, brings home his pay, and comes home on time, and, you know, that sort of, he's a very stable, sturdy, steady person.
Mm-hmm. In terms of things like, say, choosing the site for your house in Playa Del Rey and,
mm-hmm.
and hiring them and people and all that stuff, it seems, I've got the impression that you did a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. I found a lot. He was building us some tables. And we had looked and looked and looked, and he was tired. And he says, you go do it. So I went out, and the lady had lowered the price from $2,500 for a city lot to $1,800 four days before. And it was one we didn't think we could afford at that time. We figured $1,500 was... And it seemed strange because our lot there cost $1,800, and this one cost $18,000. And both of them had been lowered. You know, it's strange that things do happen.
Yeah,
he's, he doesn't like to handle, being a boss in the factory, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But hiring people, he doesn't do that well.
Mm-hmm.
He's, his ego gets in the way.
Mm-hmm.
He's, he doesn't mind anyone at work being more capable in some ways, but contractors kind of overwhelm me. Very independent cusses,
mm-hmm.
the contractors are. But we hired a general contractor to build our other house, and it was a mess. We fought him for 6 months to get him through. He was supposed to build it in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And he got greedy and got to building other houses, and they were on his back, and we were trying to be nice. And we ended up with some battles and the poorest cabinet work that anybody ever had in the house. He threw them in himself rather than getting a cabinet maker.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a young man, and he just got a little too eager.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice living out there. It was a small community, like a country place,
mm-hmm.
cut off from the airport.
So at that time, this is long before the airport,
Yeah, it was a little tiny spot over on the corner of Sepulveda, 5 miles away.
Uh-huh.
And we knew it was airport property, but they told us they weren't going to expand. They were going to move.
Mm-hmm.
Well, instead they expanded.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't become a problem until, they built a north runway just, I would say, 10, 15 years after we moved out there. We lived there 23 years. So it was about 10 or 12 years before it really got to be a nuisance. And then by the time we left out there, it was just impossible. The noise was,
yeah.
We were in between the runways.
Get them both.
Well, they harassed us just like they're doing Burbank and Ontario now.
Mm-hmm.
They fly low, and the other day I was over there picking up, I took some friends that live up Broad Beach to the airport, and the planes take off way back inland now, when they used to just barely belly up over our houses.
Mm-hmm.
It was deliberate, we knew that, and they'd come over us like that, and they'd say the wind drifted, or we don't know what you're talking about, we didn't have one at that time, or, they get what they want.
Yeah. So, now let's see, so in 52 you quit, what was your reason for stop working?
Well, taxes were taking more than, it was taking 3/4 of my pay, so I felt I was working for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, we figured we could make it on what Tom was making. And, I was off about a month, I guess, and then the clerk in the machine shop, in the meantime, Tom had moved down to Plant 1. They'd moved the machine shop from Crenshaw down to Plant 1. The girl's father had died, so she had to leave on emergency leave, and they didn't have anybody to broke into timekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
So they called me back for 3 weeks to do the timekeeping records in the machine shop. And I stayed on 3 more months to 3 other departments,
mm-hmm.
substituting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I terminated permanently.
How did you feel about that at the time?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved staying home. It's, home activity is what you make it. I went to school and took men's tailoring. I learned to become a professional men's tailor. And, that kept me busy, and we had civil defense at that time in the community, and then...
What kinds of things did civil defense do?
Oh, we had meetings mainly. They thought that they might, if our country was ever attacked from the east, the West, it would be at the airport, and we were more vulnerable than other places.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly to have food supply and water supplies in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any kind of attack
or
atomic?
Bombings, not necessarily atomic, no. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that many people in the world that had atomic besides us.
Mm-hmm.
But if they came in, they figured they'd try to knock out the airport. And we had the Nike sites, which was the defense all along the coast. There was one about 2.5 blocks from us down there in Playa del Rey, and one about 6 blocks away. So they were all around, and it was went on for 3 or 4 years. And then our son came along.
And what year was that?
1955.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, you had not had any idea that you could get...
Uh-uh. My poor doctor almost went into shock.
Uh-huh.
I'd had polio when I was 10, so that left me infantile, and he didn't think I could ever have children.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he never thought I would ever carry him, never even marked me up as maternity.
Mm-hmm.
But he's real proud of him now, though.
were you worried at that time that it might be dangerous for you to carry?
Yeah. I didn't care. I'd always wanted children.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the natural instinct that I wasn't going to lose him. I thought everything was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Sailed right through it with no problems at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I delivered cesarean. Mm-hmm. At that age, I was 38. You don't have the ease. And I wasn't constructed in a way to have him normal. So that was difficult to get on your feet after cesarean. And I delivered so light, I was skin and bones when he, after he was born. And then when he was 2 1/2, I had to have a hysterectomy. I'd become fibrous, so he was all of it. And today he's 6'6".
Did that change? I mean, up to that time, you had basically, you'd still had another set of years in there when you were home on your own and taking classes. And did that change?
No, changed, yes, it did. That child was such an overwhelming joy. He popped out laughing, and he giggled, and was just fun to be around. Until the years just flew by, until he was 4 and almost 5 when I fell and hurt my back. And that totally changed our life there, because I was in bed almost constantly. Well, all off and on for 10 months. And then the next 10 years was up and down. But that showed the quality of the boy. And sad, I didn't know until he was 9 that he blamed himself. He says, "Mom, every time you mention dirt diggers, I could just die. It's my fault you fell." You know, kids blame themselves for everything, divorce and everything else. And it had been too much pressure for him, but I had no idea he blamed himself. You know, you just don't think. It had been quite a bad experience with doctors and lack of treatment. They made it chronic, and they I could have been left pretty well normal if they had given me halfway decent care. But a group doctored me. I learned one thing: never go to a group. Never let more than one doctor in an office ever help you, because they'll stick together and you don't have a chance.
You just slipped and fallen?
I was climbing, Jai and I were climbing about a 3-foot hill, and I just put my right foot up on the bank with my hands, and just as I put my weight on it, it slipped down and I jerked backwards and just tore everything to ribbons on one side. And damaged my spinal cord, too. So they found out later. And it's showing up real bad now. But it was 3 weeks before I went into spasm. But it was something not to be believed. I didn't know anybody could live through so much pain. And I couldn't get anything to stop it. And that happened on 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, and it was 11 o'clock on Monday morning before they could get me in the hospital. So.
Now, did, so in terms of his care, your son's care while you were having the medical trouble, was there someone to say, look after him? This is, he's just before school age.
You know, they say when you're down, you really find out who your friends are. Oh, I found out. Believe me, I found out. A lady who I had only spoken to as she was walking around the block when John was little. She lived about 4 houses from me around the corner on Beaumont. She saw the ambulance come to pick me up. Tom had stayed home naturally that day, and he had John, and as soon as Tom came back from the hospital with putting me in. I was out when they took me in. And she came around and took John, and she took care of him all day, every day for 10 days while I was in the hospital. And I'd not known her before. And the people that I had known had not lifted a finger, including the ones across the street. It's strange how, I don't know if people go into shock. It wasn't that they didn't care or didn't know, but people get pretty much involved in their own lives. And some of the couples that I had worked with came around, several months later, you know, 15 minutes to visit me afternoon, and some of them came back, and some of them never did. It was strange. frightened a lot of people because they didn't know what was happening. And at that time, that was almost the beginning of anybody that had back problems. You know, they either broke their back or it wasn't mentioned. Mm-hmm. But nobody could figure out why I couldn't get on my feet. Well, I didn't know either. You know, they don't tell you anything. They say you sprained your back. Well, you sprained your ankle, you know, and you're up in a few months, and that's all. So I still don't fully understand it today. But I do know when it's gone, it's gone. But John rode the bus to school, and I think he first started doing the wash and the cooking when he was six. And he assured me that he could do it. And our washing facilities was in the garage 25 feet in back of the house. And he run his little legs off in and out. Do I do this, Mama? And bring in a piece of clothing. You know, should I put this in now or later? And no sister could do more than he did. And he'd change my bed and struggling with sheets. And, you know, a six-year-old kid's not very big. He'd scramble me eggs and he'd make me toast. And I had a lovely, well, she's my black sister. She worked for Tom at Northrop. I have to get her in this story. When John was 18 months old, she started coming out and cleaning house.